Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to Community Conversations here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Chris Bessler, the host today. Community Conversations airs on Tuesday and Thursday each week with pre-recorded interviews, and it's a stand-in for the live morning show that we usually air at this time. The morning show will be back when the coronavirus recedes and it's safe to get back in our studio again. We have an engaging interview for you today, I hope, as we talk with Sandpoint Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. We touch on a bunch of topics, including the community response to the COVID-19 outbreak, the conclusion of construction for the downtown revitalization project, city parks updates, including a discussion of the upcoming and somewhat controversial removal of geese from City Beach, an update on the lawsuit over gun policy for the festival at Sandpoint, and other matters. But briefly, before we get to the interview, here's another reminder on the primary elections. Due to the virus, all voting in the primary this year is by absentee ballot. And Tuesday, May 19th, was your last chance to request an absentee ballot. But it may take over a week for you to get your ballot in the mail. So today's reminder is that if you've requested that ballot, you have until June 2nd to make your vote and get it returned to the Bonner County Elections Office. If you need more information, there are a lot of details on the election and the candidates at the Sandpoint Election Central on sandpointonline.com. Also, here on KRFY, we interviewed the candidates in the contested primary races for Bonner County Commissioner and the Legislative District 1 and District 7 races for State Representative. You can hear the recordings of those interviews with the candidates if you go to our website at krfy.org and click to the podcast page. And now, on to today's interview on City Matters with our Mayor and City Administrator.
Mayor Shelby Ronstadt, City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton, thank you for talking with us today.
Pleasure to be with you, Chris, and all of your listeners.
Thank you for having us.
Well, we got a lot of stuff we want to cover about what's going on with the city, but let's start with the thing that's most in the news, the COVID response that the city is experiencing, both as a city government and as a community. Can you give us a status report on how the coronavirus is affecting city operations?
Well, for us, Chris, we're in phase two currently of the Governor Little's Idaho Rebounds Plan, and most of our city services are fully back up and operational and open to the public. So we reopened City Hall to the public in stage one. We've kept our parks and most of our recreational amenities open throughout kind of this whole crisis, with the exception of our playgrounds. Our playgrounds, we expect to be opening in 2 weeks, so that will be part of stage three. And we're currently working with the recreational programs, youth recreational programs, and then adult recreational programs to get access back onto our fields this week also.
What are you hearing about the impacts on the business community, since I know some businesses have been hit particularly hard?
Well, we've definitely had impacts with all of the businesses, and to some extent, I think it'll remain to be seen as we get moving forward and all of those impacts play out. I would like to note that City Council had approved a grant that the city made to the Bonner County Economic Development Corporation in the amount of $10,000 to match some funding provided by Bonner County, as well as the Anovia Foundation to support professional services, either reimbursement for costs or additional professional services needed by businesses related to accessing the various programs that are available to them, or for marketing development, business plan revisions, that type of thing. So we're really proud to be part of that and support that effort to keep our small businesses going.
And we should mention that if small business people are listening, that they can go to BonnerCountyEDC.com and get information about the programs that are available to help them through that grant plus other grants that they've received.
Absolutely. Between the Bonner County EDC and the Greater Sandpoint Chamber of Commerce, and Sandpoint Online, we partnered with all organizations to try to get information out, especially to our business owners in the community.
And the Greater Sandpoint Chamber, Sandpoint Online, they partnered to put up a business directory where businesses can go and consumers can go and see the status of business closures and changes to operations of local businesses. And last I looked, there were about 140 businesses that were using that. So the community is pulling together in that response. That's nice to see. Well, what do you forecast for the summer with tourism season coming on? I know it's pretty unpredictable, but there's kind of two things going on here. One is tourism is very important to our local economy. Secondly, there's concerns that tourists coming from outside the area could bring the virus here. Any thoughts on that?
I would say we're...
And those are both... I think those are both really valid concerns. And as you know, Chris, and I'm sure as all your listeners know, we've already heard of a string of cancellations of all of our many of our major events that are really significant to Sandpoint in terms of tourism through the summer. Of course, Lost in the 50s, which would have been this weekend, and the Festival of Sandpoint, 4th of July parade, and many others. So this is going to have an impact, and it's going to be felt by our community. At the same time, I think, you know, our region, and particularly our community, is seen as a green zone, an area that has not been heavily impacted by coronavirus. And that's actually going to have the effect, I think, of attracting more tourists from places like Seattle and other areas that have been harder hit. It's going to be interesting to balance that. On one hand, I think it's probably good for the long-term health and well-being of our community that we don't have those typical large gatherings that we normally have through the summer. And that's going to go a long way in helping to control spread of the virus through the summer. But I think we're also going to have more kind of what you might call small scale tourism, because we continue to be an attractive area that has a lot of amenities with the lake, with the mountain, with the abundance of natural resources and recreational resources in the area. It's going to continue to attract people from areas that have been harder hit. So I think in the end, I think we're really well positioned to continue to, keep the threat of coronavirus low in our community. But I think we're still going to have a significant amount of tourism that hopefully will stimulate the economy. So I think it's going to continue to be a kind of a tricky balance for us, but I think we're as well positioned as any community could be to both prosper economically and at the same time protect ourselves from the potential spread of coronavirus in the future.
Okay, let's turn on to a different issue here. Downtown revitalization, can't miss it if you go down First Avenue. Construction looks like it's almost complete there, with more parking, wider sidewalks, with brick trim, new street furniture. Can you give us a status report on the revitalization work that's gone on down there?
Yeah, it's basically wrapped up. There's still a little bit of a punch list, but there's really just that one section that you see at the end of the project on the south side, on the southeast corner there in front of Grace Church. We ran into a problem there where there was essentially a vacancy under the sidewalk there that abutted up against the foundation of the building. And so doing the work there required that foundation and the sidewalk there be supported. So that was an unforeseen circumstance that couldn't have been, we wouldn't know until we got in there. And so they're still going to be wrapping that up for the next couple weeks, just in that last little segment of the under the sidewalk there, before the contractor can come up and get that wrapped up probably by 1st of June. So otherwise, the project was completed on time and under budget, and we're really, really proud of that. And really, hats off to the staff and to the contractor that was able to get that work done. And a lot of that, is really, I would say, as a result of the whole coronavirus epidemic, I think that having minimal amount of activity downtown for the last couple of months has really allowed for the contractor to kind of expedite their work down there without having to, manage, control of people in and out of businesses and that kind of thing. So, but all in all, I think the project went really well, and we're really proud that it came in again under budget and on time. And Jennifer, is there anything that you wanted to add to that?
No, what you'll see over, in addition to the filling in the sidewalk for the vacancy, there is the mayor mentioned also the pedestrian lights will be going in here in the next couple of weeks as well. The kind of like phase one, those were paid for with a federal grant, which requires that timing wise, we end up having to do that kind of as a separate project with the installation of those lights. We'll also have the flower baskets coming in back downtown on First and Cedar. They came in last week when we were put up through downtown with our usual schedule on the Thursday before what would have been lost in the 50s. And the downtown baskets are here. We have them down in the Sand Creek parking lot, and they'll be moved downtown as soon as the lights go up on Cedar and First.
So this is a continuation of the revitalization project that we saw, that's been going on actually for several years. Last year, Cedar Street was improved. This year, we got to First Avenue. So what's left to do in the large revitalization plan?
Yeah, really just continuation of the First Avenue project south. So it terminates at Church Street there on the north side of the intersection. It'll continue south from that point. And include the First and Bridge intersection down to at least First and Pine. And then, we really got to, have to kind of wait and see what the financing looks like as the SURA funds are replenished over these next couple years to see, if we can extend beyond that. But we're committed to at least, completing the project for phase three through the First and Pine intersection.
Okay, and do you have a schedule for that?
I think our schedule at this point looks like 2020 will be off, starting to look at budget, revisiting our projections as our final numbers come in for phase two. We'll probably be looking at going back into design and engineering in 2021, and the fall of 2021, and we're probably looking at construction at this point. We anticipate probably 2022.
Okay, so that's a little ways off. We get to enjoy the new features we have down there. Sure. I have to say, I was down there this weekend, and I asked a few people, "What do you think?" And everybody was saying, "This is pretty beautiful." There,
that's great.
On the street, the word was people liked it. So we have that in our quiver of accomplishments, I hope. Speaking about other big construction projects, Memorial Field construction is continuing. This is to remove the current turf and put in artificial turf, plus actually add to the field with some playing fields. Give us a status update on that.
Jennifer, you want to kick that one off?
Sure. We are on schedule as we anticipated at War Memorial Field. So in the last week, what they've been working on is putting the CXT. So it's a concrete base that we're mixing in with the soil that will form a better base for the field moving into the future. So that's been happening over the last week, and we're still definitely on schedule with the plan to have the project fully wrapped up at the end of July. So that's phase one, and we have phase two of the project, which is the improvements to the parking lot, significant improvements to the boat launch. Hopefully that leads to dock improvements next year, and that is in design now, and we anticipate that going under construction this fall. We're waiting to hear this week on final approval for a couple of grants down there, which are going to support the boat launch improvements, and then will also support us putting a kayak launch down there. So We're going to be creating greater ADA accessibility, again, down to both the docks as well as the kayak launch. There will be better lighting in the parking lot. There will be more lighting. We're going to have a boat wash station down there. We already received the grant for that. So that's one of the areas where we tend to get a lot of weed collection, kind of floats up right there at the booms at Memorial Field. And that's long been a complaint by the boaters. And then they've also seen the weeds at the boat inspection station. So we've already received a grant for a boat wash station to be down at the boat launch there.
I also want to add for that phase two, we received a donation of 50 trees celebrating the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. So that was really a generous gift that we'll see the benefit from. That probably, you know, saved the project $20,000 or more too. So staff's done a fantastic job of leveraging funds, not just the 1% sales tax, but leveraging that money to bring in other grants and really bring down, be able to do more with the project and bring down the cost of the taxpayer.
Yeah, where we are right now for that phase two project is we're anticipating in excess of $600,000 in grants that we've been able to leverage with the 1% local option tax, as the mayor mentioned.
Sadly, the festival at Sandpoint canceled its season, and that was one of the driving factors for the schedule. Has that changed the schedule at all?
No, we are still the schedule we had planned on, we're still sticking with that schedule. We believe it'll be done on time as we had planned to accommodate the festival. So we will be ready for the festival next year.
Well, what? A year early.
Yeah.
Never hear of that before, have you?
That's right.
In construction projects. So one criticism that's been out there on social media, is asking, should the city be spending money on this project when the economy and possible revenues are uncertain due to the coronavirus? What do you say to that?
Well, you know, a lot of people may not understand that these are restricted funds. When the voters passed that 1% local option tax, those funds were specifically dedicated to this project by law. They can't be spent on anything other than what the voters approved. So the city has a lot of different restricted funds, and this is one of them. So with restricted funds, we are required by law to spend those monies on those specific projects, and we simply don't have flexibility to take that money and use it elsewhere. So from our perspective, this was actually a good investment in that we're spending the money as was promised to the taxpayers, but it's also really a benefit for us in this time when the economy is struggling. And so any jobs that can continue and any infrastructure projects that can continue, keep people employed, keep money flowing in the community, and keep the community moving forward so that, there's a sense of normalcy for one, and that when the economy does open back up, that we're in a better position to support a stronger economy in the future and a better quality of life.
And as you mentioned, Shelby, that was part of the ballot measure when the 1 cent sales tax that's paying for this was approved, that the people that it'd be spent specifically on parks and actually specifically on improving the field surface at Memorial Field.
That's correct. Yep. It went to it was dedicated to infrastructure improvements to rebuilding the grandstands and the field at Memorial Field. And then if there were excess funds, then it could be spent on other parks infrastructure.
Speaking of that sales tax, that was passed with a 5-year sunset, and it's actually sunsetting this year. What's the thought of renewing the sales tax for other parks work or other purposes actually?
Yeah, that's something that we're having discussions about internally. We are considering once this sunsets of issuing a new 1% local option tax that would be. So part of what we're discussing right now is trying to assess what would be of the greatest value to the public. And so at some point in the near future, we'll be coming out with a survey to assess, you know, what are those highest priorities for the community, whether it's reinvestment in other city parks like the City Beach, for example, and implementing the Parks Master Plan, Farman's Landing, the Sand Creek property that the city owns down there between Bridge Street and the Panada, or whether it's perhaps investing in some road, some road dollars for road infrastructure improvements and implementing the multimodal master plan. So we're looking at a number of different options, but we really need to do our due diligence and research and make sure before we propose a ballot initiative that it has adequate support from the community and buy-in. And that's what made the 1% local option tax and Memorial Field tax so successful in 2015, is it had a tremendous amount of public buy-in. It passed by 74%, and this would need to be a supermajority vote as well. And so we really need to make sure before we, before we get it on the ballot that we have the community's backing and that we prioritize the spending in a way that meets the needs of the community.
Yeah. So you mentioned it, if the city does put this before the voters, again, it has to pass with the 60% majority.
That's so right.
It's not a small feat.
And right. Chris, that wouldn't be something that the city is even looking at doing this November. So I think we need to be clear about that. We're, and what community priorities are, costs of projects. We expected that information to be available as we were doing all of our master planning processes. And we had originally anticipated that our master plans would be wrapped up actually about now and would be informing a lot of our priorities in our budgeting process for next year. And we're going to be a bit delayed with really all of our master plans, probably by a couple of months, 60 to 90 days, really, with all of them as a result of COVID hitting and working from home and kind of those impacts for us here as well as for our consultants, but also as we're finalizing these and moving forward, really thinking about what is a good time for that to happen, that the community can fully participate in that final adoption process. So we've been getting used, all of us have been getting used to working more electronically. The public's adjusted to using our Zoom meetings, and that's still honestly an adjustment. So as we're finalizing these, looking again for that opportunity that we really ensure that we have that public involvement as we're finalizing plans.
Okay, Shelby, you mentioned the parks improvements on Sand Creek and City Beach, and that's part of the Parks Master Plan. I think that plan has been approved. Or at least it was approved for Memorial Field and all. What's the status of the Parks Master Planning? Specifically, I think City Beach is probably the next one that was getting the most public comment.
Yeah, no, that's great. We have a workshop on the Parks Master Plan that's gonna be before council. Is it this next Wednesday?
Or it'll be the June 3rd meeting where we'll be talking about the master plans. And we hope to get those posted up for the public to be able to see those and have some comment even before we do that workshop.
Yeah. So the purpose of the workshop is to make sure that, you know, we've considered everything in the plan and, before we bring it up for council adoption, that we want to make sure that we give the public every opportunity to look at the plan, comment on the plan, make sure that, you know, we've considered everything before we actually bring it up for adoption.
And then the full kind of master plan document, Parks Master Draft Final Master Plan, will be going to council the second meeting in in June. So that'll be the June 17th meeting. We bit off a lot with this, with the specific site plans, as well as the more broad parks and recreation master plans. So we decided most appropriate with coming back to finalize this, kind of breaking that apart so that we can give adequate time for full vetting and discussion on both aspects of the plan.
Okay.
And I should add too that, you know, different than, there has been a change since the original Parks Master Plan was originally rolled out. And we've also parsed out the Watershed Master Plan that will actually be considered separately after after approval of the overall master plan that's going to be considered this June. We will consider that, you know, probably rolling into the fall and even in through the winter, this coming winter.
And that particular plan involves
specific to the exactly
watershed up near Schweitzer.
That's right, potential recreational use up in the Little Sand Creek watershed up Schweitzer Road.
Okay, one more parks topic here. Let's talk about geese, because that's become somewhat controversial. Now, correct me if I have any of this wrong. The city's had a problem with large numbers of geese at City Beach for years. Their excrement is unsanitary, and the geese can be aggressive with people. And the city's tried various things to chase the geese off. Last year, it captured, banded, and relocated 144 geese with the plan that if they return this year, they'll be euthanized. And as it turned out, nearly half of the geese that were relocated last year returned within a month of capture. So as it currently stands, I believe this is the plan. In June, the city plans to round up and kill up to 150 of the previously leg-banded adults, along with their goslings. It's been controversial, so some questions here. I believe this requires a depredation permit from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. What's the status on that?
Yeah, we're waiting to hear back from Fish and Wildlife Services, probably today, actually, whether or not that permit has been approved. I will say a couple of things in clarification. In addition to, you know, a variety of strategies that we've tried over the years to try and ward off the geese, we've also purchased a couple pieces of equipment to collect, to rake up and collect the feces. And that has also, you know, that's started in 2012, I think. We spent over $30,000 there, and as well as, you know, many man hours and labor out there trying to scoop up the poop. And that was also proven to be unsuccessful. So this is this has been something that's been on the table for a lot of years, and it's always been the last nuclear option, so to speak, because you know, obviously, you know, nobody wants to capture and relocate or euthanize geese, but after trying everything else that we have, we feel that council has felt unanimously and that in with their vote last spring that this was the only way forward. So we have also continued to use dog management, and we're revitalizing our effort right now to use dogs to a professional dog handler to discourage the geese from being there. And I'm encouraging council as we go through the Parks Master Plan process, I'm encouraging council to consider opening up City Beach to dog use, to leashed dogs on the beach, and in hopes that that will also help to deter the geese over the long term and be a more sustainable option. And the other thing that I will say is with regards to the collection and relocation program last June, that was incredibly successful. And so I would take issue with the position that you know, they simply returned within a month. There were some that started returning after a month, but I haven't heard from anyone that has expressed anything other than gratitude and relief that we really went through the whole summer last year without that huge feces problem on the grass and on the sand. And it really was a welcome change down at City Beach. It was clean. It was inviting, and we got a lot of compliments over the year that program was really successful.
So I know dogs have been tried in the past. Are they just not working? You've actually
had... Yeah, that's right. I mean, they work while they're there, right? But the geese are smart, and they know they catch on to, if we had a dog that basically lived on site and was constantly chasing geese, it would probably solve the problem. But when you have a handler that comes in for, an hour or two a day, they will leave for that hour or two, or they will go to the other side of the beach from where the dog is. And when the dog's gone, they come back. So it really takes a continual sustained effort for the dogs to have an actual impact. So we think that, possibly, I think that it would help if we had a leashed dog policy at City Beach, if there's, regular dogs around, but they're controlled enough to not be a nuisance to beachgoers and people just enjoying the park. But they're around enough, and their scent is around continuously enough that it would, my hope is that it would be discouraging to the geese overall, and they wouldn't be there. we haven't tried that one yet. So, as long as I've been around, there've been no dogs allowed at City Beach. So I think it's worth the effort. But I also do believe that that the plan that was approved by council this last spring was a good plan, and I think it gives us a little bit of relief to be able to kind of reset and be able to use our parks again without the potential health risk or just without the disgust of having to recreate amongst the coverage of feces all over the grass and sandy areas.
Goose poop.
Goose poop everywhere.
How do other cities that have geese handle them, say Coeur d'Alene or Nelson, which also has got a bunch of water that brings the geese in along with their grassy fields?
Yeah, I can't speak specifically. Jennifer, do you have the details of Coeur d'Alene or Nelson specifically?
So Coeur d'Alene had tried a few years ago, like we had tried the coyotes and the coyote decoys and putting those out and moving those around. And I think for both of us, that was met with some really very limited success. So when they first come out and the geese are unfamiliar with what they are, it can be a fairly good deterrent for a couple of weeks, but once you get past that and they realize that they aren't real, we had many people at the public send us pictures with the geese actually gathered around the decoys. I think really, a lot of our challenge is that we have resident geese and that population has grown at City Beach. So when we look at the behaviors are very different between our resident geese and transient geese. And we really especially saw that, we saw it with the coyote decoys, but we really saw that last summer too, where with the relocation of the resident geese, we did see a population start to move in kind of fairly quickly after the relocation within about a month. But a lot of that initial population was a transient geese population. And you could tell because the geese we had moved had the bands, the transient obviously weren't banded geese. So we were able to monitor, which were returning and which were others. But the behaviors with the transient geese are very different. So if people are on the shorelines, when the dogs come in or even with decoys, those work well with the transient geese. But the resident geese are used to all of those things. And so they really aren't effective measures. Up in Nelson, they've used another device that is a light device that they can install. You can install it in the water or on the docks as well as on land, and it emits kind of like an emergency light going around. And what we found, Kim and our Parks and Recreation Department spent a lot of time talking with groups, talking with experts about this. The mayor authorized last year even bringing in a group called Geese Peace, which is doing work around the country in this effort. And primarily their work is around addling the eggs in the springtime to prevent increases in the population. But they noted at the time that they came out that these other measures, they may work for a very temporary short period of time, but they are not midterm or certainly long-term solutions. We also run into the issue down in the public area too. We saw this with coyote decoys, with vandalism, and we lose some of these things as well. So they really, even from that standpoint, when we've deployed these measures, they don't necessarily stay in the public setting.
Okay, well, on to another city issue, and that's the guns lawsuit. The city's been sued by Bonner County and Sheriff Darrell Wheeler over carrying guns, specifically at the festival at Sandpoint at Memorial Field. What's the status of that lawsuit?
So where we are at with that is we've just been through a couple of weeks of depositions with a couple of city staff, myself and Chief Corey Kuhn, by the county's attorneys over the last couple of weeks. And the next court hearing will be a telephonic court hearing, and that is scheduled for June 19th. The city has filed paperwork before the court, asking the court to make a decision based on standing. We take the position that the county does not have standing in this case to have brought a lawsuit against the city on this effort. Likewise, we're prepared if the judge does not make a decision based on standing. I think both parties will be ready for a full hearing on the 19th. And again, that will be conducted telephonically.
Okay. This is a case that has potential statewide impacts. Are you hearing anything else from other cities or municipalities that also might face a similar situation?
I know that they're watching it very closely, and we've had contacts with other municipalities as well as different groups similar to the festival who are similar circumstances. Again, they're leasing property, interestingly enough, either from municipalities or in one case directly from the state, and with similar policies of those organizations based on performer contracts.
Is this likely to go all the way to the Idaho Supreme Court, do you think?
I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Certainly hope not. Obviously, there's a lot of taxpayer dollars wrapped up in this case as well. So on both sides, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Mayor Ronstadt, the Administrator Stapleton, that's kind of my list of questions. Open mic, anything you'd like to let folks know about happening with the city right now?
Well, I just want to say, fortunately, we entered phase two of the governor's reopening plan and on Saturday, and it was great to see many of the restaurants back open again and many of the retail businesses. I understand, it's been devastating to our community like so many others how hard this has hit us. And fortunately, we didn't have the impact of actual a lot of sickness or any deaths, which is really fortunate because many communities, can't say that. But we certainly felt the economic impact and continue to feel it. And, my heart goes out to everyone in the community that has been impacted by this. Many have lost their jobs and many are just many small businesses are struggling to get their feet back under them. And I understand, how difficult that is. We the city will continue to do whatever we can to be supportive of small business here locally, and I just hope we can as a community, continue to pull together and support each other and make it through this this challenging time.
Jennifer, any last words to your folks out there?
I think it's been a great disappointment in the community, certainly with cancellation of events this last weekend, which ironically was a beautiful weekend, would have been our Lost in the 50s event. We do permit our special events that are on public right-of-ways and in public parks and other locations through the city. And we do have other groups that are coming through and still planning to hold events this summer. So we've got a meeting with POAC, and as far as we're aware, they're still planning on doing their arts and crafts fair later this summer. I know some others are looking at some events as we move later in the summer as well. There is a group in the community that is coordinating with the Lions Club and looking at whether they can pull off a 4th of July parade, including fireworks. So we may still see that happen, but we haven't gotten the final information on that. Farmers Market opened this last weekend, and while they've made some changes to ensure social distancing and best practices around the COVID pandemic, they're open and had a good turnout this weekend and plan on staying open through the summer. So we are hopeful of some events coming up later this summer, and I know the community would really like the opportunity to really celebrate our community again.
Well, City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton, Mayor Shelby Ronstadt, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Chris.
That's it for our show today. If you've just tuned in, you've been listening to Community Conversations on 88.5 KRFY and our interview with Sandpoint Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. I'm Chris Bessler, the host today. Be sure to tune in Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. each week for more Community Conversations. Thanks for listening today.